So continuing our exploration of Zen echoes and the three women Zen masters, I'm going to look at case one. The world-honored one ascends the seat. This koan's also found as case one in the Book of Equanimity and case 92 in the Blue Cliff record. One day, the world-honored one ascended the seat. When the great assembly had gathered and settled down, Manjushri struck his gavel and said, "Observe deeply the Dharma of the Dharma King. The Dharma of the Dharma King is like this." The world-honored one then came down from the seat. When someone steps up to the high seat, people gather and settle, hoping for words about the Dharma or a pointer on the way. Our tendency is to listen carefully to such words. Ideally, they'll convey more than the dictionary definitions we recognize, more than the grammar directs us to see. Manjushri goes along with this to a point, striking the gavel and admonishing us, "Observe deeply." But then the world-honored one just steps down. This has no beginning. The 12th century Chan master Miaozong commented on the situation, saying, "The true teaching has been transmitted in its entirety. No method, worldly or sacred, has been kept hidden. The prison gates shatter into 100 bits and pieces, the brilliance of flinty spark and lightning flash." Miaozong assures us that no method, worldly or sacred, has been kept hidden. Method comes from the Greek meta, meaning beyond or after, and hodos, meaning journey. So, roughly, method means how to get from here and now to there and then. As the hopeful audience, we're most likely expecting to hear of a method, a means of reaching something, something we long for, something else. But Miaozong says, the true teaching has been transmitted in its entirety. Even Manjushri's words only tell us to observe deeply. All right. We see someone ascending the high seat. We hear and Manjushri telling us to observe deeply. The Dharma, the principle that orders the universe, is like this. Like what? Just then, someone comes down from the seat, and that is all. We see, we hear, we see. Observe this seeing deeply. Miaozong rejoices. The prison gates shatter into 100 bits and pieces. Wait, what prison gates? What's been shattered? Well, how about the expectations we brought to the gathering? Those appear to have been surprisingly unfulfilled. The expectation that if we listen to words of a wise one, we will learn the way seems legitimate, if you could point to the way. But as Jie Guan Lun, an 8th century Chinese Zen text, cautions, the mind cannot conceive of the way. If we cannot conceive of a thing, we can't point to it, can't plan to get there from here. So that expectation is shattered. Expectation, the prediction of effect, do this to get that, is one of the fundamental behavioral processes observed in living beings, isn't it? In language-able beings, it's the process of figuring out if A, then B. Is expectation a prison gate? Maybe these Zen masters are presenting something entirely different. Mao Zedong says, "No method, worldly or sacred, has been kept hidden. No method has been kept hidden because method itself is a prison gate. To employ method, that is, to try to journey from here now to there then, in this context of longing for truth or ultimate reality, to seek for something or some configuration of experience that we think is absent, is simply a mistake. But if we observe deeply what's right here, even what is right here today, now, in this room, as this room, the prison gates shatter into 100 bits and pieces. Nothing changes. And as Mao Zedong says, everything appears with the brilliance of flinty spark, a worldly phenomenon, and lightning flash, a cosmic phenomenon, if you will. The true teaching fills the whole of existence, small and immeasurably large, ordinary and unthinkably extraordinary. Light pours through the entirety. It's traditional to characterize Zen by referencing a verse attributed to Bodhidharma, a special transmission outside the scriptures, not founded upon words and letters. In congruence with this, Mao Zedong says, the true teaching has been transmitted in its entirety, since no words can convey what is always already evident. No attainment is possible because, well, by what means can air become air? By what means does water become water? And raven, raven. Nothing is missing, ever. The world-honored one ascended the seat. The world-honored one came down from the seat. The 17th century Zen master Baojie responded to the koan and to Mao Zedong's verse with the following. A single eyelash in your eye, falling sky flowers. A single sound in your ear, poison-smeared drum. If you busy yourself with worries, you will never understand how beneath the gavel the bitter is separated from the sweet. The phrase sky flowers or flowers of emptiness refers to human delusions as insubstantial as the spots that appear when we rub an eye. Hence, one interpretation of this line is that the flaw in vision occasioned by an eyelash creates the illusion of falling flowers, a classical image of delusion. Then the second line, a single sound in your ear, a second line would be the answer, the definitive end to delusion. But given the parallel form of the first two lines, like a single eyelash in your eye, falling sky flowers, single sound in your ear, poison-smeared drum. I prefer the meaning to be parallel too, and according to my confidential informant in Chinese, The emphasis on the first line is on fall rather than flowers. So he would have written it, a single eyelash in the eye, sky flowers fall. An eyelash in the eye is irritating. It hurts. We try to get it out as soon as we can, and the spots we may see from rubbing the eye soon disappear. Boucher parallels this line with a single sound in your ear, poison-smeared drum. The sound of a poison-smeared drum was traditionally thought to kill all who heard it, and in Zen literature, what dies is the hearer's delusions. The greed, hatred, and ignorance born of our mistaken notions of who we are and what's going on in this thing called life. So these first two lines are commentary on the koan, which presents a single event in sight and in sound, with a single instruction to observe deeply. In effect, Boucher asks, do you see? Do you hear? Observe deeply. And she continues, if you busy yourself with worries, you will never understand how beneath the gavel the bitter is separated from the sweet. The admonition not to busy ourselves with worries parallels Miao Zong's assurance that no method has been kept hidden. Like method, how to get from here to there, worry is a pressured concern with figuring things out. The word actually derives from the old English term wirgun, meaning strangle, a vivid image that nicely fits the experience of worry, dwelling on difficulty or troubles and characterized by indecision. This is something we all experience, that pressured uncertainty of comparing possibilities. Often we reject first one view and then another, and then go back and do it over again and again in case we miss something the first time, endlessly looking for some resolution that is right or true or without drawbacks, only to find all possibilities unsatisfactory. There's a reason that dukkha or suffering is sometimes translated unsatisfactoriness. Boucher warns us that holding on to worry, the gnawing doubt about a right answer, a correct response, will only prevent us from observing deeply, experiencing the whole extraordinary fact of seeing and hearing with delusions fallen away, mistaken notions put to rest. Boucher says, beneath the gavel, the bitter is separated from the sweet. This image encompasses both Miao Zong's shattered prison gates and Manjushri's strike with the gavel, as well as her own direction not to hold on to worry. It also points to something else requiring attention and deep observation. Namely, if we hold on to worries about right and wrong, should and shouldn't, we'll not be sitting in our native place, the unperturbed center in which the gavel strikes sounds as ourselves. Chan Master Zukwe, the senior of the two 17th century nuns in this collection, addressed the koan and Miao Zong's verse, saying, a lightning-like stratagem that confuses both humans and gods. A single blow smashes it to bits, suffusing the world with light. Great wisdom can seem foolish. Great skill can seem clumsy, and even Gotama had to learn how to train his unruly mind. She continues with a second quatrain quoting the Song of Enlightenment and closes with this line: "He conveys the teaching directly without lodging it in words." But for today, I'll just consider the first two lines. A lightning-like stratagem that confuses both humans and gods. A single blow smashes it to bits, suffusing the world with light. It is odd, given what I said about method, that Zukwe characterizes the case as a lightning-like stratagem that confuses both humans and gods. A stratagem is a military maneuver designed to deceive or surprise, clearly a method devised with a goal in mind. Like lightning, it strikes without warning, blinding and deafening beings both ordinary and extraordinary. How can we observe deeply if we're blind and deaf? How can a stratagem deliver the blow that smashes it to bits? Confusing. Still, if struck by lightning and unable to see or hear in our accustomed way, we might notice, we might observe deeply what remains. That is the single blow that smashes the stratagem to bits. That, the light that saturates the world. And this has neither beginning nor end. The entire scenario, the gathering of the crowd, the ascent to the seat, the gavel strike, and announcement, and then the descent from the seat, then Miaozong's verse, those two events precipitating Boucher's verse and Zukwe's verse, this whole sequence is about response, perceiving and responding appropriately. Does the story imply that Manjushri conferred with the world-honored one ahead of time? Did they plan out this course of events as a calculated teaching device? Hardly. Each figure, each element woke to the situation and moved at its own time, in its own way, in response. The presentation of this koan in the Blue Cliff Record centers around the identity of perception and response. The pointer there says, "One who can discern the tune as soon as the lute strings move is hard to find even in 1,000 years. By releasing a hawk upon seeing a rabbit, at once the swiftest is caught." Sensing conditions, circumstances, the mood of crowd and performer, of wind, hawk, and rabbit on a particular day and time. Sensing how past experience will manifest in each and all. This broad, open awareness, not hampered by attachment to individual identity, becomes appropriate response. Oddly enough, the root meaning of respond is to promise in return. It grew from the root spend to make an offering or perform a rite, hence to engage oneself by a ritual act in return, given the circumstances. Promise comes from pro, meaning forth, and mitere, to send forth and let go. As we move in and out of the Zendo this afternoon and on through the day and night, let's continue to observe deeply, engaging ourselves completely in response in each moment, and letting go completely into the requirements of the next. In closing, I like to recall 12th century Zen master Fuyan's words. In your daily activities, when you see forms, this is an instance of realization. When you hear sounds, this is an instance of realization. When you eat and drink, this is an instance of realization. Each particular is without subject or object.